Have a specific episode you want to hear? No problem. Head over to thevap.locals.com. You can listen to any episode anytime. Stream it directly to your phone or on your computer. You can also pick from one of our many curated playlists to hear specific topics. So head on over to thevap.locals.com.
For Friday, August 7th, 2015, you're listening to The Vap, episode 236. Tanks, toilets, and Wi-Fi. Oh my.
With 2 tons of aluminum hitched to his bumper, cruising down the internet superhighway, The Vap is streaming right to your ears. Vintage Airstream Podcast. And now your host for the Vintage Airstream Podcast, Tim Shepard.
Living in aluminum.
Here I'm back again, episode 236. I'm your host, Tim Shepard, and I have with me Colin Hyde. Welcome, Colin.
Good day, everybody. Coming to you from beautiful Peru, New York, where it's, it's been really hot lately, but it's starting to cool down a little bit. But the weather's still pretty good, you know. August, going great.
Nice, nice. Well, my Apple Watch says it's a 82 degrees here at the VAP studio, so there you go.
82. Yeah, we had like 90, I think, a week or two ago, and everybody was sweltering. And that's like the hottest it's been in a year.
Oh, no. We've had over 100 a few times already.
Yeah, no. We get like 100 once every 100 years.
Over 100, and we're only allowed to water our lawns on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and that's it.
Well, we could water our lawns whenever we feel like it, but we just let the rain do it.
What's that? We don't have
it keeps down forest fires.
Nice, nice. All right, well, I'm looking at the VAP Facebook page. If you're not a person who has liked it, get on over to thevap.com and click on our Facebook link, and you can like us too. We have 1,198 likes, so we're two away from being 1,200.
So we should get two more tonight.
There you go, yeah, get two more tonight. So, yeah, that'd be cool, that'd be cool. So, what's new and exciting in the Airstream world? You have a rally coming up. I got one coming up.
Yeah, I'm heading out tomorrow to Vintage Trailer Supply capital. Literally is the capital of Vermont, Montpelier. And they're having a customer appreciation rally this weekend. And they're doing we're camping at a state park, a local state park outside Montpelier. And then the whole gang, I think there's 35 that they can accommodate. But anyway, gang is pulling the trailers in early Saturday morning and parking on the main street in Montpelier. And it's going to be an open house all day, which we'll see how well that goes. Because it's a long open house. It's like 10 till 3 or something like that, which is it's pretty long. That's longer than normal from what I can remember. But anyway, it sounds like fun. And then he's having a sidewalk sale at his facility, which is downtown as well, on Sunday morning. So.
Oh, cool. So what's a customer appreciation rally? Is it where they – the customers of VintageTraderSupply.com, I guess?
Well, what he did is kind of nice. He charged $100 for the rally, and he's paying for the state park fees. So there's no fees there. And then you come do the open house deal, and then he gives you a $100 voucher to buy stuff at his sale, which is it's scratch and dent. I mean, it's I think everything's there, but he's got all kinds of scratch and dent stuff or, something end of line, whatever, stuff like that. So he says he's got lots and lots of stuff. So
that's cool.
Yeah, so you basically get your money back in stuff.
Stuff, yeah, yeah, yeah. Very nice, very nice. Well, I just signed
It's not
up.
All Airstreams, though. It's, you know, no, it's vintage trailer supply. It's not vintage Airstream supply. So, you know, there'll be other brands out there for sure. I think probably 50% would be my guess would be Airstreams. But it'd be interesting to see. And I think everything is, I think, pre-79. I believe that's... excuse me. I believe pre-79 is a cutoff, something like that.
Okay. Are you doing any kind of talk or anything this one?
No, just the open house, blah blah blah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I just signed up for the NorCal Forums Rally, Jackson Rancheria Rally, something like that.
Jackson Rancheria.
Jackson Rancheria. It's a if I got the name right, it's a. It's a campground that's up at an Indian casino in Jackson, I guess. And it's really cool. We went there last year for the first time. And then it's like once you get in the queue, the list there, you don't want to let it go because there's like a huge waiting list to get in. Mm-hmm. So you want to maintain that. So they get a nice discount. I think the sites are probably like, I don't even know, 50, 60, 70 bucks a night probably because it's really a immaculate place. But they get a group discount of 32 bucks a night.
So, wow, that's great.
Yeah, it's really nice. And it's like, you know, it's not your kind of camping. It's, you know, full hookup with, you know, manicured lawns and hedges, you know, between you and the camper next door. And they have a huge in-ground pool and a couple of spas and like a game room and all kinds of stuff. And then you can leave the campground and head up to the casinos. I don't gamble, but they have, you know, all that stuff going on. They have all these restaurants and, you know, stuff. It's pretty cool. I remember they had a cave nearby. We did that last time. I like to go to caves and stuff, so we did that. And I think there was something that was like some huge flower poppy field or something, but it's only for the springtime, so we missed it. We missed it last year, so I guess we'll miss it again, but it was supposed to be some kind of big deal. We were supposed to go back this spring and didn't do it, but... Anyway, it'll be a fun rally. So that's not until October, like October 9th or something. So, but I did just get my spot secured.
Well, that's cool. So, well, I signed up for another one. Another one in September. Well, you know, I typically go to the Finger Lakes. I think it was a Northeast. So I'm not sure what they call it. Anyway, Tin Can Tourist Northeast Regional something or other, which is, you know, what we normally do every year, sort of mid-September. But I signed up for another one in late September. It's actually in Dearborn, Michigan. It's another Tin Can Tourist event called the Fall Gathering. And I'm going to be giving a seminar there, actually, as well, but I'm kind of looking forward to it. I've never been there before. I've heard a lot about it, and I know there's a big Henry Ford Museum, which I'm kind of looking forward to going to. So that's going to be, basically, we'll be gone for a week for that.
Very good, very good. Well, sound like there are rallies in our future.
Yeah, yeah, and then we're going off to Fish Creek Pond in a couple weeks as well, for a week, which... You know, it's not the full-service campground. It's boondocking. And instead of a pool and a spa, we have lakes. The old-fashioned approach that you can canoe in and go boating, sailing, power boating, whatever you want to do. And fishing, you know, all that sort of stuff, which we really enjoy.
Yeah. How rustic of you, man.
and we don't have hedges between campsites. We just have like huge campsites. And it's like a real forest.
Oh, wow. Well, good on you. let's see. We are coming up on, it might be, I guess we should do it on the September 3rd show. It's going to be our 10th year anniversary. Is that right?
Yes, on September 3rd, you're saying?
Well, we released our first show was dated September 15th, 2005. So the closest date that's running on our schedule, I guess we could push it to the 17th. Let's do that. September 17th, we'll record our 10th anniversary show. So if you're listening out there and you want to like call in, say anything about our 10th anniversary show or have any ideas or have some favorite moments or something like that, maybe I could pull up some audio clips and things.
Or you can't believe we've actually been around for 10 years.
That's right.
And we're still talking about floor rot.
Because we can't believe it.
I think floors have rotted out since we started this show.
Yeah, that's right.
Were not rotted before.
Yeah, they probably were replaced 10 years ago, and now they're bad.
That's right.
Oh, man. It reminds me, I need to build a roof over mine, you know, like you got. Keep
that's
it out
right.
of the rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that could happen. That could happen. So, yeah. So, between now and September 17th, give us a call, 707-533-4827. 707-533-4VAP, and leave us a comment or something about our 10th anniversary show coming up. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that's got to be pretty monumental in the podcast world, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because 10 years, I mean, podcasts, you know, barely started back then. I know we started early on. I mean, there's probably a couple that are right there with us, but most podcasts, you know, fade pretty quickly. I remember there was another one that was coming out to try and talk about trailers, and it lasted for what, one episode?
One episode, that's right.
One episode, something like that. You know, because, you know, as much as it is, it actually is work and commitment to do it. You know, it takes me and Colin showing up here every couple of weeks and putting it together. Sometimes it's not what we want to do, and sometimes it always is. You know, it is what we want to do, but we show must go on, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but you know, I really enjoy it, and I get a lot out of it. So it's great. I mean, when we started, there's no way I would have thought 10 years. I thought 1 year would be ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I would have never even suspected. And we almost quit 5 years ago, right? Already 5 years ago. We almost quit.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah, I think so, because we thought it was our fifth year, and it was our 100th episode or something. I don't remember, but we tried to quit.
We took the summer off.
We did take a summer off, yeah. We were going to take every summer off, we decided, so we could have a break, but we didn't ultimately do that.
Well, then you can't do the summer location things.
Yeah, right, the summer rally, you know?
Yeah.
Because maybe I'll do that in... I don't know, in Jackson, what's that going to be? No, the timing is off by a week. But, yeah, anyways, yeah. I mean,
can always shift the timing. We've done that before.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, too. You know, because they had a lot of time when we did that. We did that in the spring rally one time, and we had a good time doing it live.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're listening.
I have a good time doing them live. You know, it's and I love getting the feedback from people. And some, obviously, are listeners, and some are people that have never heard of it, but mm-hmm. get on anyway. And you get a good perspective of the rally life and that particular rally, that wherever we happen to be.
Yeah, it's easy for you, but it's hard for me. Could you say, "Hey, here's Sam, Tim. Hi, Sam."
Well, you do a fine job.
Yeah, sometimes it's.
I'm in the background listening.
Oh, okay.
But I'm only listening to half the conversation, of course.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah. If you guys want to send in comments or questions or anything, you know, we always need questions for the show. But for our 10th anniversary coming up. For what we say, September 17th. All right? So give us a call or send us an email. questions@thevap.com. We'll do it. Speaking of questions, I don't have very much, so we'll dive into the one I have, and then we'll just have to wing it from there like we always do.
There you go.
This one's from Keith from Brooksville, Florida. Keith's got a 29.
I've been there.
Oh, yeah? I bet you have.
TCT event.
Keith's got a 29-foot 1969 Ambassador. Ambassador, and he says, I've been looking at the Buff Pro Polisher and wanted to get your feedback on it. It looks like a great concept and might speed up the first couple cuts. I'm guessing you would still need a normal polisher for small areas. So I don't know what a Buff Pro is. Maybe I should Google it while you answer it.
Well, first of all, I should say, what's the gentleman's name again?
He is Keith from Brooksville.
Keith, I got the same trailer as you.
Oh, 69. Well, he actually said 29-inch, but I think he meant 29-foot. We could have a 29-inch one.
maybe he's hopeful.
Yeah. If you just water it, it'll grow to a 29-foot. So, yeah. 1969 Ambassador. That's a pretty long one. Well, mine's pretty close to that, 28-foot. So they're fun to polish, right. I'll tell you.
Well, I got the 28 as well, but one of my other ones is a 29 Ambassador, 1969 29-foot Ambassador. Anyway. To answer the question, I own a Buff Pro. I purchased it 2 years ago, I guess. And I thought it was a brilliant idea. I do feel it is a good machine. It's just the problem with it is that the machine was really developed for car detailing guys, body shops, things like that. It was not designed for polishing trailers. Yes, I'm sure you could do final polish with it. What I really wanted it for was first cut. You know, the first cut is the hardest, always the hardest to deal with. And the problem with it is that the drums on it, because, you know, in the aircraft world, they use these big pneumatic drum polishers. And this, I felt, was a similar concept, but electric. And I said, hey, this is a lot cheaper than the big drum polishers. You don't need some massive compressor to operate it. Da-da-da-da. The problem, though, is that the drum itself, although they do have different types of buff pads for it, the basic drum is foam. And then they have ones with a wool pad on it. But the problem lies is that the wool pad is covering up the foam drum. So it's really too soft to put any kind of force into the skin to remove the oxidation. That's what I discovered. Because on the DeWalt polisher, the rotary polisher, you know, you can lean on it if you need to. You can back off. You can rotate it around. Granted, it's very much a point loading when you're dealing with that. But the Buff Pro, you can sit on it, and it doesn't make a bit of difference. It's like sitting on a rotating cushion. You know, it's too soft. And I have made suggestions to the manufacturer that this is what you need to do. There is a market here. All you have to do is make a new drum that locks in, and they would have another market. But I don't believe they're interested in that other market.
It looks like it. I mean, I'm looking at, I don't want to fire off the video because it'll get the audio in the show. Well, that might be interesting. Let's see if we can hear what they're talking about. Looks like it's just a spinning wheel. Let's see. Well, they got some music here. See how they're going to talk.
Well, what it is, it looks, if you really look at it, it looks like a grinder or a buffer turned sideways with a bar going across to hold the other end of the drum, and then a double handle so you can really control it.
It looks like you're holding a spinning toilet paper roll.
But it's big. You know, like the drum big. Is probably, I don't know, a foot long.
But how does that make no swirl marks?
Well, it's because it'll make, if it's going to do anything, it'll do lines.
Well, okay.
But that's how the aircraft polishers do it as well.
All right. So, go back to the old try and true method of the compound buffer, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've done approaches. In fact, we do have this. We've got a mandrel that goes on our DeWalt polisher that you can mount several buff wheels next to one another. So you can make a buffer. You can make a drum that's, I don't know, 2 inches wide, something like that. And we use that for going around windows and difficult areas. And if you really want to lean on a specific spot because there's corrosion or scratching or gouges or something like that, we use that. But trying to do the whole trailer like that, I mean, it's certainly doable, but it's not, well, I think it would take forever, quite frankly. I mean, it already takes forever, but it would take two times forever.
Yeah.
But there's people I know that have stacked up numerous buff wheels next to one another, and sometimes they use the floppier ones, mm-hmm. which, again, to me are too soft. But, you know, there's many ways to polish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That looks like it'd be hard to get to because it is so big into little intricate areas and around, you know, different trim pieces and stuff. It's like it would be hard.
There's no question. You would always have to have, you know, a DeWalt type polisher for other little areas. And we even have these little things we put on air tools to get into nooks and crannies.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Keith, for sending that in. That's the only current question we had this week, but I think I have some old ones here that I don't know that we've gone over. So let's just go over them. So that's your cue, everybody, to email us your questions. Go to thevap.com, use the Contact Us page there, or questions at thevap.com, or give us a call. 707-533-4VAP. So let's go ahead with this question from Ryan. Ryan says, I'm brand new to the whole Airstream world, but last week I bought a 71 International Lanyacht 27-foot, and I gutted it over the weekend. I'm pouring through the podcast and the forums and learning as much as I can. Thanks so much for making this great information possible. I have two pretty basic questions about tanks. First, absent any obvious leaking, is there any reason to suspect that the existing black tank or fresh tank are unsound or unsanitary? Are there any tests that I should run while everything is exposed, or can I assume that they're usable unless I find some glaring evidence that they are not? So that's his first question.
Well, we know the whole word assume.
Yeah.
And I have assumed things in the past and been stung. So it's 71 overlander, correct?
That is correct. 27-foot, yep.
Okay. So basically, it's got the freshwater tank is underneath the floor just forward of the axles. And it hangs below the belly pan by about an inch or so, something like that. Well, we've taken a lot of those tanks out, and that's the fresh tank. And we've taken some out that were cracked. I've taken some out that had cracks in the top and had remains of animals or remains of their abode nest on top of the tank. So their excrement managed to make its way through the crack into the tank. I was taking some of these tanks out where the fresh tank was actually dirtier inside than the black tank. So yeah. I suggest everybody that has this era of trailer, I mean really any of them, you know, because they are a clear tank or translucent anyway. If you drop the tank out the bottom, you know, there's a bracket you can take off and lower the, there's a big piece of plywood, 1-inch plywood that you lower down and take the tank out of there and you can flush it, you can put bleach in there. You'll be really kind of surprised what the inside of this thing looks like and go like, oh my God, I can't believe I even brushed my teeth using whatever came out of there. So what we've been doing is converting them into gray tanks. So they're a pretty sizable gray tank, and then we put a fresh tank inside the trailer, typically just ahead of the gaucho up front.
So on your trailer, regular people who have their restored trailers, what kind of maintenance should they do on that? Because I noticed if I pull mine up and look at it, you know, mine's a new tank, or it's, you know, not new anymore, what, 8 years old. But, you know, you end up getting, like on my vent tube and stuff, there's, you know, mildew growing in there. Just from being moisture, you know, and the heat.
That must be a California thing.
Yeah, exactly. I do bleach treatments and stuff. It's hard to get it in the overflow tubes, but, you know. So what do you recommend on that? Once a year, twice a year? What do you do?
We do it every year.
Every year?
Yeah. And, you know, we do it on customer trailers, too, that have been, you know, we've gone in the tanks and seen some scary stuff. We would basically pour some bleach in. I'm not really sure on the amounts, but, you know, I always figured too much isn't an issue. Too little is definitely an issue. So we pour a bunch into the tank, and then we turn on every faucet, you know, shower, all that sort of stuff, until you can smell bleach coming through the water stream. And then you just turn it off and let it sit overnight. And then we drain the tank and refill and run all the faucets and everything until they don't smell anymore.
How do you handle the hot water heater? Or the water heater? The cold water heater?
Run it through there, too. You run... Yeah. You don't necessarily have to turn the hot water heater on, but you turn the hot water tap on with your pump going. And, you know, make sure you obviously fill your tank. But, you want it to go through the, come out your hot faucets as well as your cold.
So, Ryan's second question, and you kind of covered it a little bit, excuse me, but he wants to know how to install a gray tank on his 71. I've been reading a lot about it. I can visualize the process of mounting the tank in the frame, and obviously I need to route the sink and tub drain to it. I'm just not sure what's supposed to happen for outlets. Does the gray tank need to go into the black tank itself, or just connect with a Y at the outlet? Do I need some kind of pump, or does it run by gravity? What about vents? Thanks for the great show, and thanks for any help. You're welcome, Ryan. Thanks for writing that in. So, you know, I guess we already talked about probably best to just convert his fresh tank, but even so, how does he tie that into his outlet?
Well, when we convert them, I mean, we're kind of fortunate in that we have spin welding capability, so we can put new fittings on the tank to suit its new job. So basically, the tank is oriented, like I said, it's just ahead of the axle, underneath the floor. And if you go in underneath the galley, there's a square hole in the floor with some tubes and stuff coming out of it. The pump is right there, and that's what pumps up into the sink right there and pressurizes the whole system. So in that area, we add an inch and a half inlet on the top. Sometimes we've had to do it on the side and with an elbow fitting, but spin weld an inch and a half fitting in there, and then we put another one down as low as we can on a flat section for the drain. So the galley sink drain at the moment goes, you know, down underneath the galley and then underneath the towards the back, underneath the bed, and all the way to the back, and it goes down through the floor, sometimes in the closet area, or around the back underneath the vanity. So that's really where it drops through the floor. Well, instead of doing all that, we take all that stuff out and run the galley drain right into the top of that tank, into that new fitting. And then the other fitting, the lower fitting, we run an inch and a half pipe from there through the frame and right straight to the back to the dump valve plumbing. And you obviously key it into where the gray water goes. Then what you do is you run the shower, which is also going in. Well, not every time is it going through the floor. Sometimes it's running just above the floor, and the tub is slightly above that. But it's got to go through the floor somewhere. It would tee into that tube going from the now gray tank to the dump valve. And you do the vanity sink going in there as well. That way, when the gray valve is closed and the water from the shower and the vanity sink would go down that drain and travel forward into the tank. And you got to make sure you have a vent on the top of the tank as well. So even that inlet from the sink, we would usually tee off that going to one of the vent stacks. That way the tank can fill. It's sort of basically that tube going to the dump valve. It's the shower water would backflow up to the now gray tank.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did when I added my All Right tank. I guess I put the wrong link on the site for that. It's all ALL-RITE.com. I'm going to fix it on the site. But yeah.
Where did you send them?
To all ALL-RITE. I don't know where they went.
Was that like a clothing dye company or something?
I don't know. I didn't click on it. somebody complained. You're in the wrong place. So I'm fixing it. There, all fixed. So yeah, I did essentially what Colin said, and I had the fitting set, so it came up through. Actually, it came up through the middle of the trailer under the bed, and I guess I kind of cheated because I had the kitchen sink going down the length of the trailer to the middle of the trailer where the bed was. And then it teed off and it went into the tank, so that brought sink water into the gray tank. And then I teed it back up into the closet and went up for the vent. So my inlet right. and vent is basically the same, which is fine.
Yep, that works.
And then I had a secondary. This is what I was worried about, but it ended up being fine. Is my secondary input to the gray tank comes in. Underneath the trailer, so like because the tub sits right on the floor in mine, that's not on a box, sits right on the floor level, and then the sink for the bathroom sink, the vanity sink, that goes straight down, and then it tees into the tub, and they feed the side of the gray tank. So I was always worried about, what's it going to do? Just fill up into the side and then backflow? But it doesn't. It fills up the tank and it's just fine.
Right, because it's higher mm-hmm. than the top of the tank. Now, right. granted, the top of the tank is only 5/8 of an inch below the bottom of the shower.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so that was kind of one of the things when I was designing it and everything that worried me. But it turned out just fine. I can... all kinds of water in there. I don't know, 20 something gallons, but and then there's another outlet, was it 1.5 inch that comes off, and then it just goes and it tees into the 3-inch, you know, drain.
The dump valve assembly.
Dump valve assembly, yeah, the dump valve assembly. So yeah, it actually worked out fine.
And your tank's what, 30 or so gallons?
I think it's like 20. It was a custom made for the size in there. I think it comes out to like 22 to 24 gallons or whatever. You know, we only used it once
Your boondocking?
For our boondocking experience where we did a couple of showers in it. And then I was like, I don't want to haul this around. So in the middle of the night, I just dumped it. Anyway, it's in a parking lot.
Not in California, of course.
No, it was in Florida. We were in a parking lot. I was like, yeah, it's just gray water, whatever. But it worked out fine. But yeah, you can sneak in those vents and stuff and get it to go. Just don't forget your traps. That's the main thing going down into those tanks. And
yeah.
A lot of people might not think, but if you have your trap, it'll just come right. You know, you have the drain coming straight down. You'll go right into a trap, and then you go back, you know, to the wall or whatever. In a trailer, what you should do is just come out of the sink and go. Just put an elbow in there and go straight to the wall, and as high as you can to the bottom of the sink, and then put your trap against the wall. This saves you all kinds of room for, you know, pots and pans or whatever that you're going to put underneath the sink. You don't have to have that trap coming right out underneath the sink. Just put it between the drain, you know, and the bottom of the sink. But I always put it up against the wall.
Yeah.
That way you can put pots and pans and all that kind of stuff underneath there. You don't have the stuff to deal with.
Yeah, you want to make sure you keep as much usable space.
Oh yeah.
You know, under the sink as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every time you're designing something or modding something in there, think about you as having to be the guy to come back and fix it later.
So, well, exactly.
Design things that you can. I mean, I've done that before. Instead of having screws on the side of a fan that I couldn't get to, I made like slots and wedges system that would slide it into something, and then I could screw it on the accessible side. And you know what? Right after I did all that and assembled it, the thing leaked and I had to pull it out. So it was like, I was glad I designed it that way.
Well, there you go.
Think about usability, serviceability, all that stuff. All right. Okay, Ryan, thanks for sending that in. Appreciate that. Hopefully it helps you or get you where you need to be. Got another one here from Dano. Dano says that him and his wife are in the process of choosing a trailer and a tow vehicle. They'd love to do some extended boondocking. Then you need to get some solar panels, man. I'm still running solar over a year now. No converter plugged in.
Yeah, you could probably like sell it.
Yeah, I know, huh? Could sell it. Or just don't boondock in the winter. I'll be in trouble. Let's see. We love the layout of the modern 25-foot center baths, but we currently lean toward the frame-up remodel of a 60s or 70s trailer. Airstream has a published list of trailer weights online that I refer to often as they come upon trailers and ads. My question is, how accurate is the list of trailer weights?
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
Because it gets the impression.
But I think the relative weights are accurate.
Yeah. Because it gets the impression these trailers are actually a few hundred pounds heavier than the day they left the factory. Well, could be people modify them.
Well, these are dry weights. So remember, there's no propane, no water, no gray, no air conditioner, a basic battery, which is in many cases just one battery, and it's a small battery. There's a lot of things there that they kind of took liberties on, put it that way.
Yeah, and you never know what people do. You know, they rip out, you know, 1/8-inch paneling cabinets and stuff, and laminate countertops, and they put in giant Corian and or even worse, like ceramic tiles and granite and all kinds of stuff, or they paint the walls and, you know, knows what they're doing. You know, yeah, it's all going to be, the weight's going to be changed. I mean, you should weigh yourself anyway. It's not hard to do. You can go to those, you know, most farm areas, they have those big weights. I took mine up and had it, or scales rather, and had it weighed. It was like, I forget now. I used to have a piece of paper here. It's like 4,200 pounds or something.
Well, that's not bad, because, I mean, original dry weight was supposed to be 38, 39, something like that.
Yeah. I don't even know if I had my air conditioner on it yet. But, you know, it's a lot lighter than the new ones, I'll tell you that.
And you've probably got about 200 pounds of extra wire in there, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. My trailer's worth more in copper than everything else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I can tell you is we, some years ago, we did a 63 Tradewind, and we weighed it after the fact. And with gray tanks, with all the mods we did, new appliances, air conditioning, gray tanks, you know, all this stuff, we added somewhere between 300 and 400 pounds to the original dry weight. Yeah. So I think that's kind of a rule of thumb when you bring it up to modern day with all the accoutrements that we expect. That's, I think, would be realistic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got air conditioning and disc brakes with the brake actuator and a microwave and a bigger fridge and, you know, all kinds of stuff in there. So, but
yeah, well, your bigger fridge probably weighs about half what the original fridge weighs.
Probably. But, you know, we designed the new axles to handle all that too, right?
Sure.
Beefed up the frame in the area. It's all the kind of stuff you get to do. When you're designing it yourself.
That's right.
Dano asks, would you guys be willing to address the issue of incinerating toilets? We're going through an extensive remodel, moving the bath to the center. It might make more sense to purchase that and not have to deal with a dump station. I don't know. What do you think about an incinerating toilet?
I don't have any experience with them. I've read about them. They seem really designed more for a camp, i.e. cottage-type environment, from a standpoint of space, etc. I think, you know, composting probably makes more sense if you don't want to deal with dump station issues.
Yeah, so you're talking about like that Nature's Head. That seems to be the
They're very simple.
You put the peat moss in there and you dump it and all that stuff. So
right, it's got like this crank, you know, to swirl everything around to create the aerated, I guess, so the composting works well.
Yeah, so check that out, Dan. It's that natureshead.net for that one. I mean, we've heard a lot of good about that one. So that might be easier. But, you know, again, if you're really moving stuff around, it's not hard to build a toilet on top of a little riser with a tank on top of the floor. You don't have to run everything. You don't have to run anything, like, you know, between the frame except for the dump. And that's the nice thing about having a above-floor tank is you just can run the dump straight down and just have the dump cap right there at the belly pan.
And it's also really easy to tee the gray water in.
Yes, it is. Okay, making my notes here. So thanks, Dan, for that. Oh, he says, I just ordered Restoring a Dream. Can't wait to dig into it. In case you don't know, that's my book on restoring my ambassador, available on Amazon. Got to get that plug in there, you know.
Was that like Restoring a Dream?
Yeah. Every time we said that, Steve Danson Hansen was taking a shot.
Danson Hansen?
So there you go. Just for you, Steve. Anyway, appreciate Dano for the comments there. Let's see. What can we do with this one here? This is one from Kathy. Enjoyed the Wired Up show when we talked about all the wires it takes to restore a trailer. Not sure what episode that was, but it was not too long ago. Can you discuss in-depth internet access and security? Well, I can tell you that, maybe we mentioned a little bit in the last show, the Wi-Fi Ranger, the latest one that they have, is actually pretty good. When we went camping in Santa Cruz, the Wi-Fi was really, really tough to get to, straight to your iPad or iPod or whatever you're using. So the Wi-Fi Ranger lets you connect to a faraway Wi-Fi network and suck it in and then rebroadcast it locally. And that actually, just by doing that, adds a lot of security because you're on a secondary private Wi-Fi with your equipment. So that's not accessible to anybody else. It's like having a router between you and them. So that provides kind of a built-in security. Plus, you don't have to re-IP or configure all your devices. You just do it on the Wi-Fi Ranger and have it connect to the internet source. So that works pretty good. And another thing we talked about before was the TripMate, Hutu TripMate, real inexpensive device that actually could do similar to the Wi-Fi Ranger, but you know, very much more limited because it's just a little self-contained little box that, you know, it really needs to have good coverage to the providing internet service in order to rebroadcast it. But, you know, it can if you could put it outside or in a car or something like that. You know, it might be fun playing with it because they're like $50 or less. just to get into that. I did a video on it on my YouTube, the VAP's YouTube channel. Go to VAP.com, click on YouTube, and you can find the video there. But essentially, it'll take a Wi-Fi network that has internet and then rebroadcast it on its own local network, and which would be closer to your devices. And it would provide a kind of an amplified internet service, if you will. I did try it just to compare it, and the Wi-Fi Ranger, which much more superior in that case because that signal was really hard to get. And the outside Wi-Fi Ranger antenna was really nice. And then other advances we talked about is having a 3G, 4G antenna, or even with the Wilson cradle to bring those the signals into your trailer. It's hard to get, you know, RF inside of a grounded aluminum trailer, right?
Yeah.
So anything you can do like that to get access, get RF inside. So we really recommend those. 3gstore.com for that stuff. They're really good there. They can help you out with the cables and connectors and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's just the same old kind of stuff. We've talked about that kind of stuff before. Probably if you're really limited on what you want to do or to deal with, probably an outside antenna with a 3G, 4G antenna. You know, make sure it matches the technology. I know Colin ran into that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you have? You had a 4G antenna and you were trying to get 3G signals or vice versa? I don't know.
No, it was the bigger problem was the booster was 4G only.
Oh, that's right. And the antenna could convert it, but the booster blocked the 3G signals.
Exactly. So when there was no 4G, I really had nothing.
Right.
Even though there was 3G out there.
Right, right. Because those are different technologies that operate on different frequencies. So you want to make sure that everything in line from your antenna to your device matches the same technology or can convert it. And unfortunately, because of that, they get more expensive. You know, a combination 3G, 4G antenna or amplifier booster that can do both, it's probably a little bit more expensive than just one or the other. Same with the antenna.
Well, I got that small one, the Wilson one. It does both.
Yeah,
it does both.
Yeah.
But it's not as strong.
Right. So I got to get me one of those. I still don't have one of those Wilsons.
Yeah, you would really, really like it. I think everybody should have one of these things because it works on your phone, it works on your jetpack. If you've got a jetpack, it makes a world of difference. That's really the best, because I've gone through a variety of these things. And that's by far the best one I've had.
Yeah, I think I sent them an email asking them for one, and they never got an answer. So I guess I'll have to buy one. How terrible is that?
Now that is terrible. Yeah. You're going to have to be just like the rest of us.
That's no fun. You have to send me the model you got there. You probably did before. But
maybe you should actually contact the 3G store and do this.
Oh, there you go. Maybe we can do something like that.
Then they might, you know, you give them a plug somewhere along the line, but... Yeah, that's the one that I forget what model it is, but anyway, I think you found it in the store at one point.
And that's another thing you could do. You know, if you had one of those Wilsons, you know, it's like a little cradle. You put the phone in it, like let's say you have an iPhone, and because I'm an Apple guy, and I'm sure you have an iPhone.
Yes.
So you put it in the cradle kind of holds it, and then it inductively couples the RF into a little antenna port on the side of the Wilson. Then that goes out, that cable that you get from 3G store, it's a special cable, RF cable, and it goes outside the trailer and then up to the antenna, which Colin and I have those nice TV antenna masts from 1959 and 1960 that really conveniently hold those. So the RF goes from the Wilson out this cable, then broadcasts out the big antenna on the roof, so that brings in your signals. So another way to get internet to your iPads and computers is to use the what do they call that? You can turn on the internet to share it to your devices on your phone instead of having to have a MiFi or something like that. So some of that you can turn on, just a service that you can turn on your phone. So you don't have to buy anything new. So you can share the Wi-Fi right from your phone to your devices. And then having that coupled to the outside antenna would, you know, greatly enhance the reliability and speed. And then all your devices inside are just connecting to your phone. So you don't have to buy anything else, but if you already have a service that you could do that. But sometimes they limit the amount of data you can do on those things.
Yeah. Now, I should point out that that cradle does come with an antenna. It's just not as fancy as the that white one that goes up on the top of our mast.
Yeah, that's a really nice one because it has lots of gain and stuff. The word I was thinking of, hotspot. Turn the hotspot on your phone.
There you go.
Yeah, and you can unfortunately, my plan is still the old grandfathered unlimited data plan. They don't allow us to have hotspots, big old meanies. So I can't turn my
really?
Phone. Nope. Can't do not. I'm not allowed to turn my phone become a hotspot.
I'll tell you something, because one of my employees who's living in his trailer, he did it through his phone, and he was using, God.
Yeah.
100?
Yeah.
100 gig, I guess, month or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went into the Verizon because he was grandfathered in too, and they were trying to take him off that plan, and he was playing dumb. And I was like, "Well, is that really a lot?" And they're going, like, they couldn't believe it when they looked at the bill because it was like this set plan. But anyway, he was streaming Netflix.
Oh yeah.
And it just sucked it up. But anyway, what he was telling me was that you could actually take the SIM card out of your phone and stick it into a jetpack.
Oh, he must not have. Well, I wonder how that would work.
He didn't do it, but this is what he had been told.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't sound right to me.
No? How come?
I'm just going to guess, and I could be wrong. You want me to do that on the show? Because the SIM card has to match the IMEI number, which is the internal serial number on the phone, in order to actually probably activate. Those two, there's a SIM number and there's an IMEI number in the phone. It's like a digital serial number, and I think that those would have to match in order for you to get it to work. I don't know. Doesn't sound right.
Well, when my brother-in-law goes to Europe, they sell SIM cards in vending machines in the airport. And he would pop them out, get them at the vending machine, and he'd just stick them into his phone, and he's European bound now.
Okay. Interesting. Well, if you're listening, you know, call in and set us straight on that.
Yeah, it'd be kind of interesting, but
can you take your unlimited data plan on your Verizon cell phone and pop the SIM card out and put it in a hotspot and keep going? Can it be done? Anyway, so those are really probably the best ways around. Like I said, if you can only afford one thing, either just use the hotspot on your phone with an outside antenna. Outside antenna is the key. You're not going to get around that. The outside antenna is
right.
The key. So the outside antenna with your phone as a hotspot, or just a jetpack, you know, that you buy a separate plan or add it to your shared data plan. You know, that's pretty convenient too. So when you're driving down the road, you know, everybody in the family can use their iPads and all that stuff. And then if you want to really enhance on top of that and be able to save your data caps, then adding the Wi-Fi Ranger on top of that is good, because the Wi-Fi Ranger will connect to a local Wi-Fi or somebody else's hotspot that's open. I don't know who would do that. And then if nothing's there, it can connect to your hotspot and go from there too. So anyway, those are the recommendations for keeping connected on the road, because you know what, if you can't post that picture of your campsite to Facebook while you're there, what fun is it really, if everybody doesn't know you're having fun, right?
Of course.
All right, guys, I think that'll do it. That's good for the show this week. Be sure to, we're running out of stuff. We're scraping the bottom of the barrel here. I want to thank, not that she's at the bottom, but thanks, Kathy, for sending that in. But anyways, out there listening, send their questions or comments in, and we will get to them on the next show. So maybe, Colin, you're going to be at a rally next time?
No, I'll be camping next time.
Okay.
But we're camping with a group of Airstreams, both new and old, actually. We'll be at our favorite campsite, so that should be good.
There you go. All right. Well, drive there safe, and we'll talk to you next time. We'll see you down the road. Thanks, everybody.
Good night, all.
Missing an episode? Get the DVD MP3 set or download any show from the VAP Store at store.thevap.com.